Is that Momo in the background already?
No, he's asleep on the chair.
I feel like all of a sudden I hear it could have been my dog. I don't know. This is Bree. I'm here with Len. We're here to have a conversation with my new friend, Sarah Lacey, on another episode of A Creative Affair. So we're inviting her to join us in our creative affair today. So it's really fun. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Very excited to be here. I love a good creative affair.
We are so pleased that you do, because we've been hoping you'll join us.
I'm very glad that the timing worked out.
Yes, totally. You know, I've been meeting a bunch of people online, and I've been having some like online coffee dates, which is really fun.
Yes.
And right. And so Sarah, I don't know, I guess we were in a Facebook group and it was like, hey, you could be a guest or maybe I could be a guest or whatever. And I'm like, hey, let's have a chat and see if this might work out. And so here we are. This is in the chat. We had a chat before.
Yes. But yes. And the chat was fabulous and worked out. And I'm very excited to continue our chat.
Right. Because actually neither of us wanted it to end.
I know.
And we were like, let's do this more. And then we can record a podcast too. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's the absolute beautiful basis to continue a conversation, that you want to keep talking to someone. And that's magic. I think that's absolute magic that can happen.
I literally, like, at the time, I was like, I just have another meeting. Like, the only reason I can't sit here and keep going is, like, I got to go be somewhere else.
And I probably had to use the restroom, so it probably worked out for the best.
And that's exactly how Bree and I met too, isn't it? We had this desire to continue talking.
Right.
Yeah, let's do something together. There's a spark in the conversation and it needs to keep going somewhere. And look where it ended up.
Right?
Yeah, like 2.5 years later or something. Crazy. Can you believe it's been that long?
We love that. I love that. And I love, too, friendships and, like, connections where, like, the time just zooms by and you're like, can't even believe it's been 2.5 years.
Right.
So there's something special going on here.
It's so great.
Mm-hmm. I feel it.
Yes. Well, now that we have you in our podcast grip, Sarah, tell our audience, we know about you, but tell our audience a little bit about you, and then we'll just kind of get into the conversation. So just give us a little, you know, who are you?
Yes. I'm going to try to do a better intro than the last time I was asked to do an intro. And this story probably describes a lot about me, like, right off the bat. Before Christmas, and I was like, I was burnt out. I was ready for my break. I was meeting up with some people. I knew most of the people in the group, and only one woman knew, didn't know who I was. Everyone else gave these beautiful intros about, like, how they came to art and what they loved about art and, like, their future plans, and brilliant. And it got up to me and I was just like, so I'm Sarah and I paint stuff. And they were just like, what?
Yay, yes. Sarah, like an AA meeting. Welcome. Yay.
So I'm going to try to do a little better than that, although I make no guarantees.
But the thing is like, people will find out who you are too during our conversation.
Yes.
Which is lovely.
Right. So basically, I mean, it's not wrong. My name is Sarah. I paint stuff. I'm an artist and a portrait painter and a teacher. I have a classical realism background, so I have a very traditional sort of training. And I think human bodies are the most fascinating, magnificent, rich subject matter ever, and that sort of fuels all of my art and all of my creative practice. So everything kind of comes back to the body.
How beautiful is that?
I think that's enough to get us started.
I totally agree. Maybe we talk about that first.
Okay, sure.
We had a little list of things, and Len's like, oh, let's just start at the top. I feel like we don't start at the top.
Ooh.
Like we start at the bottom.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
Maybe. I love this because, so Sarah, when you, I give everyone a form to fill out, and I love that you said this. In fact, I may quote you.
That's totally
everyone
fine.
Everyone feel free to quote Sarah Lacey on this. You said, our bodies have our stories written on our skin. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me start over. Our bodies have our stories written on our skin, muscle, and bones. And if we pay attention, there is so much grace and wisdom and power there. Mm.
Yeah. My training, we had a live model 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. And that's all I did for nearly 3 years. And it was the best experience ever. Life drawing is my happy place. Like, you put me in front of a nude model, give me a pencil and a piece of paper, and I'll sit there for hours. It's just, I can't worry. I can't feel anxious. Like, I literally can have no other feeling except for, like, just blissed out. It's the happiest place in the world for me, because every person just has this beautiful story, these beautiful shapes. Like, the shapes in the human body are, to me, just incredibly beautiful. And the more you sit with someone and the more you pay attention and study them deeply and closely, the more the story of who they are sort of unfolds as you're looking at them. And so it feels like this blossoming as I'm working. And it's like this person just sort of blooms on the paper in front of me or in the painting in front of me. And how do you not get addicted to that? How do you not want to just do that every day for the rest of your life?
When you say their story unfolds, can you tell us a bit more about that? Because it's not their literal story of, I went here, I grew up in this town, I'm this many years old.
Right.
Well, maybe that's actually a bad example, but I went to this school and did this. When you say story, there's something else unfolding in here that's really, really beautiful. And it sounds like you're obviously a keen observer and love to interpret your observations into something going on in your mind and into the artwork that you're making. I'd love to know about that.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. It's not like linear narrative. You know, I'm not looking at them and being like, oh, and how is, like, I don't know, you know, Grimsby Public School. But it's much more about, it's the story of someone's character, right? That, and sometimes also the story of their physical activity. You know, your bones actually change based on how you use them, because where you develop more muscle develops, you build bone calluses there. So, for example, people who swam all through high school, like, I can spot a swimmer from 50 paces, right? Because they have a very particular sort of like shoulder structure. People who...
Triangular,
very
aren't they?
Triangular, right? Super triangular, very narrow waist, like, they're lean.
Exactly, yes.
Even if they haven't swum in 10 years, right? Like, they're still that body. So there's the way someone has moved in their body. That is part of the story. But there's also something, our bodies give us away so much more than we think they do. Most people aren't paying attention, so it's okay. Like, no one's, like, reading your secrets. I am. I'm that weirdo on the bus with you who's like, I see everything about you. I try to wear sunglasses, so I'm not creepy. It's sort of these personality traits. Maybe it's more about the way we've responded to the world. That when someone responds to the world with kindness and generosity, they hold themselves differently. The muscles in their face have formed differently, because it's about the sort of repeated ways we hold our face, the repeated ways we hold our body. When someone is feeling beaten down by the world, you know, like, you can see that in the way that they carry themselves, the way they hold themselves inward, like they're protecting themselves. You can see when someone has been, you know, is very rigid, right? Like, rigid people hold themselves in a very different kind of way. And so you can see all of these things when you're paying attention to someone. And I come to it with zero judgment. I'm not making a judgment about who you are. I'm just really, I'm curious. I come to it with the spirit of, like, curiosity and fascination, that whatever your story is, however you've responded to the world, I am fascinated by that. And I want to tell that story with humanity, with compassion, with empathy, and try to express who that person is. And so it's sort of about me, but it's really about them. Like, how can I create something so when that person comes over and they see it and they go, oh, wow, like, that's me. Like, you caught something about me. That is the, that's the juicy stuff. That's the icing. That's the cake, the icing on the cake, everything.
How you just spoke about what you do and your art and all the things that you pay attention to, I just feel like that's true passion. I mean, when we are truly passionate about what we create, we start noticing all of the small, tiny details all about it, and they become, I want to say beautiful, but they're all interesting, each part. And I love the no judgment part, because really all humans are fascinating, right? And to be able to look at a person with, even without them talking, and be able to know so much about them, that's so interesting. We've talked a lot about the human, like art and the human experience here.
Yeah.
It's really, that's really interesting. I love that perspective so much.
As you're observing these little mm-hmm. things, and they are little because most people miss yeah. them, and you're a connoisseur of observing them and taking them in and noticing them. And
yes.
they come into the artwork, don't they? They yeah. they don't come in as caricatures, and but there's a little bit of extra attention to these tiny little details that add this incredible emotional depth and story to the person and to the artwork, that allow the other observers, the rest of us who are looking at it, and obviously the sitter looking back at it as well, to almost have a magnifying glass that allows them to, I'm going to say it, bear themselves to the world and to others. It's I think this is a really fascinating thing, that you concentrate on these little tiny little things that you're seeing.
You're absolutely correct. So like what my teachers used to say to me, and what I always said to my students when I was teaching, was we can only draw what we understand. So a huge part of my training is just to understand what you're looking at. And you reach a certain point, and I think this is where the sort of unfolding happens, is as I understand, as the more I observe someone, the more I understand them. And the more I understand them, the more I understand them, right? Like it's an exponential process. The more I see, the more I see. And at the same time, you're always paying attention to the whole. So you avoid making someone into a caricature, because even when you see those small things, you know that they are small things. They are small details that are all adding up. They're the grains of sand that make the beach, right? That you don't want to overemphasize them, because then your grains of sand turn into rocks and then it's not a beach. Or it's a very different kind of beach. Much more British beach in certain places. So I'm always, you know, you're always kind of like stepping back to pay attention to the whole, to make sure that all of the pieces sit in harmony, sit in place, that you're not over. And of course, like that could be a creative practice, is overemphasizing certain things to tell a certain kind of story. And there are times when I use that if I've gone into something and I know I want to tell a certain kind of story. But when I'm life drawing and I'm just trying to tell the story of someone, I try to find that balance of, I don't want to overemphasize something, because it's also not my story to tell, in a sense. I'm to decide which part should be overemphasized. That's not part of my practice when I'm drawing. I want to try to tell it as a whole story, as a balanced story, as close to the truth of the person that I am seeing as me, another flawed human being, can possibly get.
Here we call that beach Hippie Hollow. But also I want to say too, because I just think it should be fun, but I also want to say, like, I relate to this so much, and I don't paint or draw nudes. Len, you're so versatile yeah. in what you do. This is probably resonating deeply with you, but there are places that I have explored that I don't see what I don't see until I look deeper. And it doesn't happen on first glance, and it doesn't happen until you really spend time with a subject and notice what makes up that story. So like right now I'm thinking about, you know, one of my favorite places. Everyone's going to be tired of me talking about it, but White Sands National Park. The last time I went, I was like, what more is here? Let me, this isn't just about dunes. This is about the story between the dunes and the mountains and the plant life that's here. And mm-hmm. I'm going to go in April and I'm going to read even deeper into the story just because that's natural for that to happen. And I think also when you're talking about the little details, we don't want to leave them out because they are part of the story. I think when you have like a freckle or a mole or a little scar, you know, or I'm thinking even like, right. I know it's so fun. Stars. I have one here. I could tell you that story. Right. So,
right. I got a leg covered in them.
We should tell those stories later. but it's the same with a landscape. Like there's scars and freckles and little things that happen. And if I notice those as a photographer and I can include those and then decide not to edit them out, that also contributes to the story. And sometimes I want it to feel chaotic and I don't want to necessarily delete anything. But I think all of our art, we're all making the decisions. And yes, you're a realist, right? But you still have to make the decision about what to put on the, on the canvas too.
Yes. And there is I'm not a photorealist either. I'm not a hyper-realist. Because my training is working from life. So if you're working from life, you actually, you are looking at the bigger picture and you can't see someone's pores, right? Because it's very uncomfortable if you walk right up to someone's face and stare at their skin from 3 inches away. So we try not to make people feel uncomfortable. So my aesthetic is much more... It's softer. I would say it's more optical in the sense of like actual eyeballs as opposed to camera optics. They're two different kinds of optics, right? So I'm making decisions about what to include based on what I can see from 6 to 8 feet away. Sometimes I am leaving out a freckle because it's too small and it's going to look weird on the drawing. There are certain elements that I leave out if I think if there's just going to be like one random dot somewhere, then people's eyes just like are immediately drawn to the dot. And then they just obsess over the one dot.
But if it was Marilyn Monroe, we would definitely want the dot.
Right. Exactly. Like there are certain freckles and beauty marks and things that we'd include because it's part of the story. So you are sort of making that judgment as much as you're trying to, I think it's about, I'm trying to be truthful to the essence of the person, and you are going for an essence, and so you're going to be editing something. And, you know, it's that dance of trying to make the most, you're trying to make honest choices, I'm trying to make emotional choices, I'm making sort of aesthetic choices, what contributes to the drawing or the painting, what would take away from it, what is visually interesting, what is less visually interesting. So it's never a clear-cut answer, and it's one of those things that you're making intuitively on the fly, right? You're deciding as you're looking at it, okay, this works, oh, I put that in, oh, God, that doesn't work, take that back out. And I love that process too. Of like that's part of the unfolding. It's part of the someone blossoming on the page is also those decisions. What's in it? What's
out? So love those. What you leave out is just such as much as important as what you'd actually choose to put in. And I must confess, I had to make notes while you were talking about that. I'm going to quote you. You can only draw what you understand. And I have to figure out how I'm going to manipulate that into a broader thing than just drawing because it's so true for all art that we are, as artists, eternally on this quest to understand the world. And I don't know if that's universal, but it definitely sits incredibly deeply in who I am. And I'm thinking about what's going on in the world in this interactive manner, interactive through my art manner of this conversation of questioning and answers and throwing it back out and bringing it back in and trying to understand what's going on in there.
I really think, you know, before we started the conversation, Len was asking you about creativity and you were like, I don't really talk about creativity, but here's the thing that I'm noticing is that, yes, you, yes, you're a realist. Yes, you paint people like mostly how they look, right? Mm-hmm. But this is where the creative play comes in, is that you have to obviously as an artist, you have to interpret how you feel about them, what you're seeing, what you're observing, and you get some sort of feeling about who they are and and your connection to them. And then I see you painting that, and it like turns out how they are, but also the work is infused with that energy too. And that's really interesting to me, because somebody else might paint something very similar, but it also has a different energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I specifically don't teach creativity. I love talking about creativity, but I never taught creativity. I sort of felt like that's outside my, in the fact that with the skills that I have a reproducible system, in the sense that I felt like, because it was the way I learned and it worked for me and it worked for my students, I felt like I can teach this in a way that people can make progress. They can make progress consistently. They can see their own progress. And I love a system. I like being able to teach a system. That's the kind of person that I am. With creativity, my own creativity is sort of this, it's a mystery even unto myself in a sense. And I like it that way. I like that it's this mysterious thing and I don't know what's going to come out, and I feed things in and things come out and it's fun. But I didn't know how to teach that to people. And I knew it just like, it wasn't my strength. My strength really is giving people a skill set, helping them brainstorm on their own creative projects. My students would bring things to me and be like, this is what I want to do. And on a, in a one-to-one scenario, super happy to like talk about their idea, talk through creative problem solving, figure out how to express what they wanted to express. But I have friends who are creativity teachers. They're genius at it. That's not my lane.
Well, this is part of the, truly, skills are part of the creative process. Yeah, I mean, like,
absolutely.
You know, when we're talking, right? Like when we're talking about even flow, you know, getting into flow or, you know, just even, you know, the whole spectrum of creative work, is you have to have some skills. And as artists or creatives, we decide what skills those are. And for sure, you fill that space for someone. And then, of course, they go out and decide what they want to do with it next, you know?
And I love that. I love seeing what my students went to do. And for me, it really mattered that they didn't feel like they had to meet my standard or expectation of creativity. I wanted them to feel like they could come to me with anything and I would be excited about it. That we talked about this briefly in our pre-chat, but that like so much of traditional art school, university, you know, I've met a lot of artists who got broken by the system and felt like they, you know, felt like they couldn't access their creativity anymore, or felt like what they wanted to make didn't meet what they were supposed, you know, the sort of like larger art world conversation of what is like real art and what isn't real art. And it's a gnarly topic. And I wanted my students to feel like whether their only goal was to just paint portraits of their grandchildren in a way that brought them pleasure, or whether they were my students who were planning a career in the arts and had, you know, big ideas and big stuff that they wanted to talk about. I wanted both of those people to feel like they could come to me and I wouldn't be like, oh, you just want to like paint children. Like, because there can be people who respond like that, right? We've all kind of encountered that person and encountered that attitude, right? Of like, what is real art and what isn't real art? And I just wanted to make it a safe space for people to make their art and for them to feel like it was real art, regardless whether they wanted to like paint rocks or, you know, plan a whole series.
I know Lynn has some stuff to say, but I want to disagree with you for a second.
Ooh, love it. Okay.
Because this is partly what I do. If like Lynn and I will be talking, I'm like, no, I don't agree with that. Yeah. I think in a nonverbal way, by allowing your students to do this, that you were teaching them creativity. And I just want to throw that out there.
I do agree with you. And the reason that I say I don't teach creativity is because a lot of people have a very rigid idea of what teaching creativity looks like. I don't do that. And so most of the time I'm just like, I'm not even going to attempt to explain to you like how it's still creative. I'm still teaching them some kind of creativity, but it is sort of it's a nonverbal, it's a modeling of.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it acceptance. You get to do what you want with your art. Yes. And that's really beautiful because we all do. We all get to choose that, but we don't need anybody else telling us we shouldn't. So.
And that was going to be my question, is not telling you what you shouldn't do. And this is part of my exploration and very much is what I'm motivated to explore, because my question is, what breaks people? Because you said art breaks people, and actually the system breaks people. And what I'm actually hearing from you is very, very clearly what you do. And I'm interested to know what you don't do, because I think that's actually also a very telling part of the story for people to avoid. Mm-hmm. And I think Bree was saying that too. It's about telling people what to do is part of what you're going to allude to. But I'm really interested in your side of that story. What don't you do, and how do you break some, or how do people get broken in the art system or in art teachers or art classes? Or
My number one rule was always meet people wherever they actually were.
Oh, I love that.
And that I had no judgment about, I had students who studied with me the entire time I ran my school. And they never progressed beyond, and this is tricky language, so I'm going to just like caveat the crap out of this as I'm saying it, that certain people made progress in a very obvious skills-based way where they went from less realistic work to more realistic work.
That would be me.
Right.
By the way.
Right? I had students whose work became more realistic, but never really progressed to the high degree of realism that I was teaching. But gosh darn it, were they happy as a clam. They loved my classes. They signed up for everything. They were thriving. What is gained by me coming over there and being like, well, you know, Laverne. I never had a Laverne, so I'm coming up with a very fake name here. You know, like... I would really like to see you're doing this wrong and this wrong, and you need to make this darker, and you've done all of this wrong, and you've done all of this wrong. And basically just pointing out all of the things that they obviously don't care about because they haven't like tried to fix it themselves. All I'm going to do is make them feel crappy with no gain. So they will go from being happy making the art that makes them happy to feeling like I'm standing behind them going, well, you haven't learned enough since you've been here. It's not my job to break people.
It sounds like the thing that breaks people is all of the shoulding.
Yeah.
You should be making work that looks like this. Yeah. We expect this standard. And maybe for some people, that pushes that possibly. I'm not saying that always. But
so then I had another kind of student, right? I had two kinds of students.
Oh.
I had the students who were just happily doing their thing. And then I had the other kind of student who was like, I know it sucks. Like, using their word. Mm. They know that there is a mistake. They know that there is something wrong. They have the vision in their head. They have the thing that they're looking at, and it's not coming out here. And so then they're going, Sarah, come and tell me what's broken. What... what am I not understanding? And we always approached it from a perspective of, you just don't understand it. That's fine. Let me give you the piece of knowledge you're missing, and then you'll understand it, and then you'll do it better. Nobody in here is broken. Nobody in here is stupid. Nobody in here can't do it because they don't have some magical missing piece of talent. You are just missing a piece of information. And you can only take in that information if you've taken in all the information beforehand, right? Which comes back to meeting people where they are. So I would only give people critiques that I knew. And I critiqued a lot. And I am very, like, one of the things I'm most proud of is there was a lot of critiquing and nobody cried and everybody loved my critiques, right? Like, people wanted my critiques. And eventually there was like a competition between like who's going to get the weirdest jokey insult about their work in the class. Like, people started like making notes. Like, there was an entire documentation about like, what weird thing did Sarah say about my work today? Because it got people laughing. Everyone is in the same boat, right? You're all laughing about the mistakes we're all making because we're all here to make mistakes together, and there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. There's nothing shameful about not understanding something, and we're going to have a good laugh about it, and then we're going to carry on. And I used so much humor. It was always about humor. And so
I feel like, sorry, no. Len, I feel like you should go back to art school and let Sarah be your teacher.
Yeah, I was thinking I'd love to have her as a teacher.
Right? We'll blast.
Yes. I'll come and watch.
That's how I teach. You've just described to me how I teach. I don't use humor in that way, but I try to. I'm not such a, I have a very dry, sarcastic humor, but I try to help people where they're at and incrementally helping them to see little extra bits to keep adding to the picture. Because, and as you said, if they don't know, they can't see it. And you have to educate and lead and help them. And it has to be incremental. You can't jump to a beautiful finished thing.
Yes, it has to be, right? You can't. And so I was always, and even the way I taught is like every class built on the class before. So we learned in an incremental way. And I was, you know, with the portrait classes, I was very rigid's not the right word, but like, there was some foundational stuff that people needed. And I was like, you guys aren't even allowed to draw eyeballs until you've done this for four classes. Like, we're focusing on the big shapes first. You can have eyeballs later. But it was always from a place of humor. It was always from a place of like, I am doing this because this is what's best for you. And this is where you're going to thrive. And building an environment that was welcoming and supportive and my models were always the center of the room, that like they were the number one most important person in the room as well, that no one was allowed to, like, if anyone had the temerity to like yell at a model because they didn't get back into position the right way, like, that's it, you're out. Like, you can come back when you can behave yourself. Like, I had strict rules of like, the model's the most important thing. She or he, they're the ones who are choosing to be really vulnerable here. They have their clothes off. You have your clothes on. So they're cold. You're not. They're the most important person here. And so it was just built around this basic respect for humanity. That was the foundation. And then we built on that. If the model feels safe and welcomed and respected and supported, then all the rest of you feel that way too. And that is how we teach, and that's how we run things. And if you don't like it, there's fine. There's 300 people on the waiting list waiting for a class here, so you can go. But it just built a really wonderful environment where I got to watch people thrive creatively. It was just a very different approach to teaching creativity.
Well, I agree with Bree that you are teaching it in that particular way. And labeling other people that teach it that they're doing it the best way or the most appropriate way, that's them marketing themselves, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're at the cold face, aren't we, Sarah?
Absolutely. But yeah, I loved teaching that way. And that will forever be my approach. You know, you don't break people.
Thank you for that, because
meet them where they are.
I stopped drawing and painting because of my teachers, And I went back to drawing midlife, and I found a teacher. And after four classes, one day she picked up a charcoal and drew over my drawing and said, "That's not how it should be done. You need to do it this way." And I packed up my things and I walked out, and I never went back again. So I've given up life drawing multiple times. I've failed at art school in this thing because they broke me. And the only people that didn't break me were the photography teachers, because they loved what I was doing and they didn't give a shit what I did either, which is meeting me where I'm at.
Right.
And even my final presentation and I did an installation to graduate, the painting teacher, the head of department, walked out and said, "More fucking photos of trees," and walked out and said that in front of me while I was standing there. And I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm going to fail art school too. But anyway, the other teacher said, "No, this is brilliant. Here's high distinctions."
Did they know it was yours?
No, obviously not.
Boo on them for thinking that and saying it out loud.
I just happened to be standing there. And when you're saying about people get broken because of this total insensitivity of not meeting you where you're at and being supportive and helping you. And this is one of the biggest things I keep going on about, is by encouraging someone, you've got to tell them where they're going right as well and help them right where they're at.
Yes.
Because this is the bit that I'm struggling with, and this is where you need to help me with.
Yep. And I always saw my job as a teacher too, because I would have students. Most of my students stayed with me for as long as I ran my school. Like, people would stay with me for years once they signed up. Because I tended to attract, I mean, realism in general tends to attract people who are more on the perfectionist, high achiever type A side of things, right? They're often, I got a lot of like former engineers, former programmers, former physicists, like people who were typically quite logical people. They're drawn to what I do because there is a logic in the way that I teach, right? It is sort of like step one, step two, step three.
This happens in the photography world too, because it's so literal and there's like tech involved. So yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's tech. It's fun. Right. And but what it means is they're the people who are the hardest on themselves. Like, I don't need to critique them. Their inner critic is already doing like a perfectly fine job of being a jerk. They do not need me in their head as well. And so part of my job as a teacher is to hold the arc of their progress. So they would come to me and be like, "I am still making the same mistake." And I'd be like, "No, no, no, you're not. When you came to me 2 years ago, yes, you were making a mistake in this area. You do not make that mistake anymore. You also don't make all these other mistakes either. Now you're making a new kind of mistake. And I know it feels crappy, but making a new kind of mistake is amazing. Like, congratulations, you suck at something new that, like, you didn't even know you sucked at before. Welcome, it's fun here." That my job was to hold the arc of their progress, to constantly remind them, like, "No, no, no, you're here now." Like, I use the metaphor a lot of circling up a mountain, that you are going to see the same view over and over again, but you're actually seeing it from a different, higher level every time. It feels on the mountain like you have not gotten any higher, but it's my job to step back from the mountain and say, like, "Okay, before you were down here and now you're up here. Keep going. You're doing great." And I always love it when my students email me and say, "You're still the voice in my head telling me to keep going. You're still the voice in my head telling me you're okay. You don't suck. You're going to be fine. Here's how you get through it." And, like, that's the voice I want to be in people's heads, right? Not the one that broke them, but the one that tells them, like, "You're going to be okay."
I mean, anyone who listens to this, Sarah can still be the voice in your head.
I can still be the voice in your head
telling you that you're okay. You can be the voice in strangers' heads too now. Like,
amazing.
"Hey, y'all, you're going to be okay. Just keep going."
Okay. Keep going.
I have thoughts. I have thoughts. But Len, what were you going to say?
You actually are teaching. You're teaching people how to be artists through the process of working in art and making it. And, like, that beautiful metaphor about climbing the mountain, the most direct route isn't the easiest route. We pick our way very delicately, and we go at the pace that we can manage and sustain to get to the top. Yes. And we might never get there as well.
Who knows where the top is? It's lost in the clouds. Like, really, you know.
The thing is like, we decide. The crazy thing about art is we decide what the top is. Yeah. There is nobody in the world that can tell you what the top is. Exactly. And even those people who have decided what the top is, that's just their opinion about what the top
right,
is.
Exactly. Like, that's nice for you, but like, that might not be my top, and it might be not someone else's top of the right. mountain. Like, let it go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was just also. I was just thinking, like, because I'm a coach and I think, like, this is how my brain thinks, yeah. is I think it's helpful, like, when a teacher teaches this to you, how the process of evaluating your work and seeing where you're going right, seeing where you want to make some changes, and then working that way, the process of going, let's say, like, up the mountain, which I absolutely love. The thing is that as a teacher, as a mentor, we can more easily see that with students.
Of course.
However, I think the amazing part is when we as artists, as creatives, can do that for ourselves. And I think this is what's missing. And this is where I'm steering us towards sustainable creativity. But I think, and like, when we talk about how art school broke us, it's, and not me, I studied music, so all the things about just learning the things, like, because you have to play this way and yeah. then you go off and do it yourself. Yeah, that's exactly my training. But when we can train ourselves to find success and see where we're going right and also see where we want to improve, I think that's really where we want to be. Yeah. As creatives, because we don't always, I think this helps us do creative work for longer, mm-hmm. be artists for longer, mm-hmm. when we're not all constantly beating ourselves down for the mistakes that we see,
yes.
we need to also remind ourselves about all of the trail that we, like, maybe we're halfway up the mountain. I don't know. We still don't know what the top
right,
is, but
right.
like looking backwards and going, oh my goodness, I came this far. Mm-hmm. Using that as a way to go, I am successful. Like, I have been successful. Look at how far I've come. And we don't do that often enough, I think.
Yeah.
How could we, like, I always want to ask everybody, how could you do that more? How could we do that more? Because I know that makes us, in general, happier mm-hmm. and more satisfied with the things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me step off my soapbox now.
So, yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, parents talk about, I'm not a parent, but have friends who are parents. And they talk about, like, if I've done my job properly, you know, my children will be independent and will go off and thrive, right? Like, they should leave if I do my job correctly. And I always felt like that as a teacher, that if I did my job correctly, people would learn how to assess their own work, spot their own mistakes. And I was constantly modeling for my students as well, like, because they would make a, I'm going to use air quotes here, mistake, right? And then would go down the spiral of like, oh my God, I did it wrong. I suck, right? You have this whole story you tell yourself when you make a mistake. And I demonstrated for my students a lot. So like most classes, I would demo for sometimes the entire class and sometimes for the first, you know, 30 to 45 minutes. And I would be looking at my model. I would make some marks and then I'd often have to erase something. And I would say to them, do you see how I just erased that line? That you could have called that a mistake because it wasn't in the right place. But I saw it and just thought, oh, it's in the wrong place. I will just move it. There isn't a story about it. You just move the line. It's okay to make a mistake. And then just move it to the right place. It doesn't mean you suck. I still make mistakes, but I make them faster than you and I correct them faster than you. So like, really, I'm still making the same level of mistakes, but I'm just spotting them sooner and correcting them sooner. And so it looks like I know what I'm doing and I do, but like, it doesn't mean I magically do everything perfectly right out the gate. Proportionally speaking, yeah.
and you don't make it a problem.
It's no problem.
You're like, oh, it just moved that.
It's just part of the
process. Yeah, there's no like real like, you're not going, oh my gosh, I did it again. Yeah. Oh, what if I keep doing it? Like, that's a lot of energy expended on beating yourself up. When art should be fun.
It's a process of continuous improvement or continuous problem solving, isn't it? It's act, reflect.
Yes.
Plan, change. Yeah. And you keep going around and you keep going little incremental changes to modify. As photographers, we do that. Well, I do that all the time as I'm exploring and I have to take a photo to figure out where the next one is. I have to make a mistake.
Yes.
And there's no perfection. There's no nirvana. There's you're just continually experimenting, exploring, trialing, going, oh, that doesn't work. I don't know it wasn't going to work till I tried it.
Exactly.
And then sometimes years later, months later, the artwork creeps back up on you and it's like, oh, it wasn't as bad as I was imagining or as what I was looking at there. It's actually, I'm seeing it for what it really is rather than what I think it should be. And I'm judging it in that particular manner too.
I often talked about learning to draw and learning to paint. Every pencil stroke you made, every brush stroke you made was a hypothesis about what you thought you saw, and you're just testing it against what you see. And so if it's not right, and I would say, if a scientist had a hypothesis and they did an experiment and it didn't work out, they're not going to spiral and be like, wow, I'm the worst scientist in the whole world because my hypothesis wasn't correct. Like, no one would ever do anything. We'd still be living in caves somewhere, right? I was like, you just got to test it out. And then if it doesn't work, cool, you move it. All you know is you need to move it. Are you moving it to the left? And then you can ask yourself questions. Am I moving it to the left? Am I moving it to the right? Is it too long? Is it too short? Is it too dark? Is it too light? Is it angled the wrong way? Do I need to angle it up more? Do I need to angle it down more? That you can just ask it questions instead of judge yourself for it. So I felt like I was really training people. It's like retraining their inner critic to go from just like pronouncing some sort of horrible judgment to asking useful questions. Because you're not going to get rid of your inner critic. It's just sort of like part of the brain. It's always going to hang out there. But can you like give it a job? And so give it a job where like instead it's going to be judgy, but instead of just being judgy with no useful information, like can it be judgy and then like ask useful questions so that we can correct the thing that we want to correct because we are trying to make that continuous incremental improvement, but we don't spiral, right?
Yeah, totally.
I know. I just write it down.
Give it a job. Yeah, it's going to talk.
I get it. So, I love like, that.
Give it a job.
Do we need to do a podcast episode about the inner critic again?
I was just thinking about behavior modification, how when you're teaching someone, you can teach an incompatible behavior. And that's one of the things that you've just done there is you're giving it something to do so it can't do something else that's in the way. And that's incredibly clever. And it's a very, very smart way of thinking. And I love it. I absolutely love it as an idea.
I can't claim it as mine. I just know that that's what happened at the school I studied at. My art school did not break me. My art school gave me wings. And my teacher's voices live in my head as positive encouragement. Or because I have quite a dark sense of humor, one of my teachers does too. So sometimes it's his dark jokes that pop up instead, but then I laugh. But I left with an inner critic who only gave me useful feedback. And so that was the gift that I always wanted to pass on to my students is how can I help you have an inner critic that just gives you something useful? Give it a new job. You can't shut it up. Give it something useful to do.
This is so applicable in so many situations, even like not art.
Right. It's life advice.
I mean, you know, it totally is because I see as a coach, I see a lot of our problems, but a lot of our angst and frustration comes from our own judgment of ourselves.
Absolutely.
And when we can like just notice that it's happening, it's there, it's always going to be there. And we can just kind of pull back and say, yeah, I see what you're doing.
Yep.
I see you're trying to help.
Yep.
Maybe you could focus in this way for me, mm-hmm. like give it that job, yeah. right? And then I'm going to use that information yes. for good, yes. for improvement, right? Versus yes. like beating myself down, which is really, it's so not useful. But also we do it. And so I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have judgment of myself when I find myself in that situation. I just know, oh, I see what's happening. It's just not useful. And it usually happens, especially when I'm starting something new. I'm like, is this the right way? Am I doing it how I should be?
Yeah.
You know, what's so-and-so going to think? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so whenever we're kind of starting something new or making a lot of progress forward, it likes to pop up. And I use that now as a sign too,
right.
that I'm on my way up the mountain.
Yes. Yes. If the inner critic is shouting things like, that's probably a good sign. It absolutely means you're outside your comfort zone, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's not a bad thing.
Totally.
It's good to push yourself. It's good to go right. a little further. Yeah, it's going to activate some of that voice. But if we do have the ability to kind of take that breath, step back for a second. Okay, I see you saying all the things. All right. That means I'm outside of my comfort zone. It means I'm doing something that scares me. It doesn't mean I'm bad and I suck. But like, it's good.
That's right.
It's good. Seeing it as information, right? How can we interpret it as information as opposed to judgment?
Right. And we also don't have to believe anything that it says. Like we can just go, yeah, I see what you're saying. And we can just keep going forward. Like, yeah, this is what I said I was going to do. I'm just going to go do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I like, yeah, I hear you chattering in the background. Yeah. I'm going to still do the thing. Like sometimes I think we can walk away from it and go, yeah, I hear you. You're just yapping on the,
yeah,
on the other side of the door. But
carry yeah. on.
Right.
Have a snack. Uh-huh. You sound hangry. Like I'm going to be over here.
That's right. But I'm on my way to go doing more awesome things. So don't get in my way.
It highlights how much of beautiful art comes from a deeper place, because that inner critic is quite cerebral, isn't it? It's at the it's in the forefront of our brain or forefront mm-hmm. of our mind. It's this voice. It's our consciousness having this conversation, and art comes deep from within, and we have to learn mm-hmm. to connect with that and shut that bit up that's actually getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting thing to play with. I'd love to ask another question, and that's about, and this is off topic in one sense, but it's definitely about okay. art. And does your art teach you things, and this process of making art, does it actually, what does it teach you?
That's a really lovely question, and also one of those things that's quite hard to answer in words. Yes, it absolutely teaches me things. And sometimes what it teaches me feels so deep and emotional, but also visual. Like it sometimes feels so disconnected from my verbal brain that I'm not sure I have words to tell you what it is. It is stuff about feel like I can talk around it, you know? It's taught me about my own body. It's taught me about understanding myself. It's taught me creative problem solving. Absolutely. Like this process has taught me how to, if I hit a problem anywhere in my life, my first question is like, what are the questions I need to ask to figure out how to solve this? Right? No problem is unsolvable for the most part. Or how can I adapt? How can I manage this? So it's probably taught me to be more resilient, that obstacles are not insurmountable mountains. They're maybe a mountain to climb. Coming back to my mountain metaphor. Maybe it's a molehill. Maybe it's something I'm walking around. Like how do I navigate that? So I think it's taught me creative problem solving and to just always keep asking questions, moving forward. And it's taught me to just, I'm an introvert, but I like people. And I think it has taught me the beauty of many different kinds of people. It's taught me to appreciate and love difference instead of othering difference, I've been able to be more open and welcoming. And that's a value that's very important to me as well. I think it's taught me to be a better person. Yeah.
It sounds very humanistic things coming out there, a love for people, a love for society, a love for the world. That it's a beautiful place that people are, no matter who they are, where they come from or what they look like or what their sexuality, like anything about them, they're beautiful. That people are beautiful the world over. It's really gorgeous. I really hate the mountain metaphor in so much. And I'm a mountaineer and a rock climber, so I love getting to the top of them.
I was going to say, I thought you would might love it.
Well, but artistically and learning life, I love to just wander the world and let it teach me who I am and what it is through this process of observation and interacting and discussing it internally through visual communication with myself to try and understand it better. And but in this process, I become out at the other end as a better person. My journey as an artist is to grow, to understand myself better and the world better. And the art becomes very much a part of the medium that I use to have that conversation that grows me into something better. Always growing, always learning, there's always more to see and to understand and to observe. And it's very much a part of being an introvert in that sense too. And we love to hide the rest of the world out through observation. Like we put our sunglasses on when we go out so we can look without being seen what we're, you know, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Wait, that's what I do. I'm definitely not an introvert.
I'm probably officially an ambivert.
Oh, maybe that's what I am. Here, I'll just do the rest of the podcast with my sunglasses on. Thank
I love
you.
That you just had them like to hand. I couldn't even tell you where my sunglasses are.
I think I have some pink ones from my daughter around here.
So oh, I love that.
I really do. I have, I put them on the last time, didn't I, Len? Anyway, it's because I came in here and immediately started from outside and started chatting. Len, I really think I love this talk about walking the journey. I feel like that's the creative life, if you want to describe it like that. But like this, I feel like the mountain is just like a...
It's not an A to B journey.
No, it's not.
And a mountain has got a top. That's one of our... And that's a misconception because they don't really either.
Right. I feel like the mountain is just a part of it. Like sometimes we're working on something, so we're climbing the mountain and it's this journey is not a climb up the mountain. There's a part of our journey that where we climb the mountain and then maybe we come back down and we keep walking, you know, that creative path. And so I think now that I'm looking at it, I think maybe there's room for both, you know?
One of the things I was hankering to speak, if fit in there, is that when we think of journeys, we often think of A to B. And when we think of a mountain, we think of the bottom to the top. Mm-hmm. And the wandering for me is without a fixed destination in mind, but enjoying the path. And whether it's a path that others have done and I'm following them or a path that I choose or feel like or my intuition goes down, that this journey doesn't have a finish point or a place to get to. It's being in the now and in the present and enjoying following it along.
Len, I think those are all really beautiful thoughts about our creative journey, our lives. I mean, our creativity has to like fit into our lives and our paths through life. It's just like one part of it, but it yes. weaves all through all the parts. And so that's why these conversations are like so important. And Sarah, we want to talk about that weaving our creativity through our lives. So we want you to come back and talk about sustainable creativity with us. So we're going to do that in the future.
Yes, I would love that. It is one of my favorite topics.
Mine too. But for now, we'll just have to pause this until the next time. But it was really lovely to have you on. We have like so many quotes from you now.
Amazing.
And I'm going to get the transcript. I already know I'm going to get the transcript and send you the question that Len asked you about what you've learned from your art. I'm going to send you that whole piece of the transcript.
Actually, so that would be beautiful. Thank you so much. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Even though words are a little plastic and they still don't always adequately describe, but you did actually a really beautiful job.
I'm one of those people where I never quite know what I'm going to say until it starts coming out of my mouth. So it's always a surprise, even to me.
And it's a question that people have really, really struggled with. And not many people have actually stopped to wonder, you know, what do I learn through this process? Like, obviously, we learn about art and the world and that sort of stuff. But there's this incredible personal inner journey going on that's magical. And I didn't really, until I got an interest in art therapy, I hadn't really started to have that conversation. And then I intentionally went down that path to try and learn more about it. And it was awakening to understand that the conversation is deep inside me. And art is part of that process of letting it out and having it. And it's the most incredibly beautiful journey of growth.
Yes.
I just love it so much. And hearing that from you, even though you can't put words on it or you struggle to it, it's still there and it's exciting.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
And one final kind of thought before we wrap up, you speaking about art therapy. My students used to joke that I was half art therapist, half art dominatrix, because when they cried, they could cry on me and we could talk it through. But also a lot of, especially the ones who were pushing themselves, like I was never being mean enough for them. So they'd be like, come over and make it hurt more. Like, so it was always.
Wow, that's another side of you too, Sarah.
I know. Well, I figured this is the creative affair, so this is maybe the right place to say it. But
Yeah, I think so.
But we used to joke, you know, everything was very consensual, but that I was half like pushing people and being like, no, 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 you've made this thing like look like this. You know, they'd fight over the hilarious insults, quote unquote. I'd give their work. But then, you know, whenever someone was crying or having a bad day or didn't believe in themselves and was being harsh on themselves, then it was about how do we pick you up? How do we make you feel better? How do we work through this? Because yes, it's about the art, but it's also about this bigger journey that we go through, right? That like learning to make art or whatever you're learning to do is a process that's always going to teach you about yourself, right? You're always going to learn like, how do I approach problems? How do I learn to be more resilient in the face of problems? How do I get myself out of this sticky situation I have painted myself into? Literally. I think we can learn so much about ourselves and learn to be kinder to ourselves. That was really the thing I always wanted my students to take away, right? How can we be kinder to ourselves through this process? A little bit of unofficial art therapy. So I love that.
So much about our humanness and our humanity. And I just think that's what art, you know, art and discussing it brings to the world as we, you know, it's about being human. And I love the loving versus othering, you know, accepting and all, you know, all of that. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us, Sarah.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was nourishing.
There's so much there I'd love to keep talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot we could keep talking about. This was wonderful. Thank you.
I've so loved our conversation.
Me too.
All right. Well, everyone, Len, Sarah, sadly, we all have to say goodbye and goodbye to everyone else. So goodbye from me.
Goodbye for me.
Goodbye for me.
And we will see you next time. Thank you for joining us in our creative affair. If you love the passion we bring to this creative content, please support the podcast by sharing with a friend, subscribing, and leaving us a review. To find out more about Len, including his photography, Len's Journal, an inspiring quarterly publication, tours, workshops, and his new art school, The Artist Club, visit lenmetcalf.com. For more about me, Bree Stockwell, visit creativemindscoach.com. There you can subscribe to my Monday motivation emails, learn more about creative coaching, check out my online portfolio, and access searchable transcripts of these episodes. See you next time.